Log Talk Radio.
Sports' cleanup hitters program as we're coming to you here on the very last day of June. There you go. There's something for you to... There's some breaking news, huh? How about that? Boom. Right there. Think about that one for a moment, folks. We are halfway through the year of 2015 as of today. Tomorrow we're heading into July 1 and everybody's got their sights now set onto the July 4th weekend, and as we do that as well, on to, I guess, in 2 weeks from now, the All-Star game coming here. I believe it's on Tuesday. I'll have to check the date exactly on that, but I know that everybody will be, in fact, on their All-Star break 2 weeks from tonight. But we've got a lot to talk about here this evening on what has been, has there been really any major drama in Major League Baseball this year? I guess it depends on the part of the country that you live in. I mean, certainly if you're down in Florida losing Giancarlo Stanton for 4 weeks, well, that can be a big deal, your team a little bit. That is, if you care about the Marlins. But really, when it comes right down to it, that's right, we got Alex Rodriguez up there. He's ho-humming his way through records all over the place. Do we really give a damn about any of those either? Well, I'll ask that question tonight. But I gotta bring this one up because, boy, oh boy, I have a feeling it's going to dominate here on our program tonight. You had to almost appreciate what the Philadelphia Phillies have done to us, not on the field, but behind the scenes since last Friday, just to kind of keep things, interesting. At that point now, I want to get in a couple of Philadelphia homies, on the staff here. I got to get Sean in. Sean, welcome in. Philadelphia Phils, it's got to be the biggest story, is it not?
I think it really is at this point in time.
Absolutely.
I mean, another manager gone. What is that, the third manager?
In Major League Baseball. Well, for sure, it's been at least three. Has there been four? Because we had what? You got Minnesota Twins. Where am I missing? I'm missing. Where's the other one? I know it. It'll come to me in a second.
I got to find out, too.
Yeah, it'll come to me in a second. Let me get Nick in here. Nick, we're saying, everybody that follows this program knows we originate out of the Philadelphia region. We know that, people that listen to this program. But, even if we were coming from, Texas, California, North Carolina, North Dakota, I still think that the Phils would probably have to be the biggest story if you're talking a Major League Baseball program, yes?
I got to say so.
Yeah. Because and we're going to get into it. We're going to get into it at length tonight. But not only Friday, but then yesterday. So we'll get into all of that here momentarily. What we're looking for is all of you to participate with us as well. Please jump in with us. whether you're a Phil stan or whether you're not. Who cares? And we're going to talk about a few other things as well. Don't worry about that one. We got a whole load of stuff on the agenda, and as we have found out from the past couple of weeks, well, gosh, we're lucky if we get to maybe even one-third of it. So, but we do have some other things on the agenda. How can you get a hold of us? Real simple, 347-826-9964. Got it? 347-826-9964. Pick up your cell phone, pick up your landline, pick up whatever it is that dials, and hit those numbers, 347-826-9964. If you're listening on a computer, hit the little, I don't know, is it blue anymore? You know, Blog Talk Radio just goes and arbitrarily changes things just for the sake of changing them. I suddenly noticed that the Skype button in the studio now is pink. How nice. But whatever the color of the Skype button is, just hit that. It'll put you through to us loud and clear. Otherwise, jump in the chat room. We've got a few people over there right now. Thank you. And or if Twitter's your thing, well, hit me up over at Frat House Mike. That's how you do it, at Frat House Mike. Okay, now, before we get into our big story, our top stories for the week, well, let's borrow. What do you say we borrow? We'll borrow Caleb's sports machine.
Tonight, through the use of the sports machine.
We've got a bunch of games that are there were no afternoon games, so we've got no scores to report. Unless there were some from this afternoon that perhaps got delayed, and I'm looking down the list, and no, there weren't. But we do have a load of games that are about to get underway right now, sometime within the 7 o'clock hour. Just getting underway right now, Baltimore Orioles are hosting the Texas Rangers. That game just got going. Momentarily here, the Mets are hosting the Chicago Cubs. That'll get going. The Phils hosting the Milwaukee Brewers. Delayed for probably not too long, because I heard that there was some inclement weather, really bad weather, that rolled through there about an hour ago. But just moments ago, as I had the radio on here, they were announcing that they were cleaning the field up pretty quickly. So I would imagine that'll just be delayed, not real long, but that'll be getting underway. Just getting underway, Toronto Blue Jays hosting the woeful now Boston Red Sox, who have just disappeared. Say goodbye to the Red Sox. They're done for the season. Detroit Tigers hosting the Pittsburgh Pirates. Atlanta Braves hosting the Washington Nationals. Cincinnati Reds and the Twins game. That game is in Cincinnati. That's been delayed. Probably part of the same system that we're dealing with here in the Philadelphia region. Miami Marlins are hosting the San Francisco Giants. And the Tampa Bay Rays playing host to the Cleveland Indians. So that's what is about to get underway. We also have, and I'm going to ask every once in a while, guys, I've got a live sports ticker thing going on up here where I can get multiple scores from multiple different sports and games that are going on around the world. You know, listen, we kind of have a big international football game going on just north of us here in Canada that I think is going to be going on like right now. And that's the U.S. women are in the semifinal against Germany in the Women's World Cup. So I don't know, guys, if you could keep an eye out, too, if you have a live ticker. I've got one going here, but if you see that a score comes up sometime during the course of our live broadcast here tonight, perhaps maybe you just jump in there and we'll hit the breaking news sounder and give you some time to give us the score on that one. Because that's kind of a big game, you know. I know this is a baseball cast here, but hey, you know something? Here at Frat House Sports, we pay attention to it all. And frankly, I got to give it to the ladies. I didn't think they'd be there, not this late. I certainly didn't. Anyhow, all right. Now, let's also real quick here take a look at standings and power rankings and that sort of thing. And I'm going to open it up to you guys here real quick and get your thoughts. I got to pat myself on the back here because I was looking at my notes from last Tuesday night's program, and when we were going through this little useless exercise that we do every week to open up the program, I had made the comment, hey, don't sleep on the Orioles. Well, holy smokes. I hate to sound like a clairvoyant, but they're right now leading the American League East after going 7-3 in their last 10. And I say, let's go O's. I'm a big Orioles fan. They're my favorite American League team. But you got to give it to the O's right now. That you know, here we start off the show as we've done. It feels like for what, the better part of the past month, you know, kind of taking a look at that American League East. It's been a marvel. It absolutely has been a marvel. All four of these teams at different times have swapped places for their share of number one. Toronto, the Yankees, Tampa Bay, or Baltimore. And you look at it right now, Baltimore is leading the East. Technically, it's a tie with Tampa Bay. You got the Yankees in there only a half game behind both of them, and the Toronto Blue Jays only a game behind both of them. It is wild right now in the American League East. Any comments, guys? Any other thoughts on what we saw this past week with the power rankings or the standings?
Not much to
Hello.
Add.
I was going to say, where's my cricket sounder?
Not from a team's perspective, but if you look at like individual players, Nolan Arenado's numbers this week were off the charts ridiculous.
The biggest loser in the power rankings, according to USA Today, was in fact those Tampa Bay Rays, who dropped back to ninth place, and yet we were praising them, and I just got done praising them a moment ago. I still say the American League East, is without a doubt the most interesting division in all of baseball to be following. Suddenly the NL Central has lost all of its interest, really. I mean, you know, poor Pittsburgh, they're sitting there 42-33, outstanding record, but they're 9 games out of first place to the Cardinals. You know, really, what other division is there to really get in a lather about except that AL East, really? It's just amazing. I don't know. Again, I throw it out there. Any quick thoughts before we go on to our first big story?
No, I'm ready to go.
All right.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, let's get talking about this Philadelphia Phillies team. And again, as I just pointed out, it really doesn't matter. I mean, I know we come from the Philadelphia region, and some people might say, well, we're being homers. Listen, let's get this one straight. There's really nothing good to talk about with the Philadelphia Phillies. So being homers for this team this year is completely irrelevant and would be useless. We're not going to get any ratings doing that. But what the Phillies did this past weekend, we got to start right from the very top. Actually, let me start it right here, because the Philadelphia Phillies do have a big, big fan. Do you know who that big fan is, guys? Does anybody have a clue? According to Caleb, the biggest Philadelphia Phillies fan is Siri. Yeah, Siri. And he's got evidence of it that he shared with us here, and I wanted to just quickly...
Who's your favorite baseball team?
I always like to root for the underdog. I guess that makes me a fan of the Phillies right now.
So, you know, right there, at least they got one fan. I don't know if she's taking into account all of the management changes that we have seen in the past couple of days, but let's start it right here. Let's start it with last Friday. And I'm sitting here and I'm getting ready. You know, I just came off of my Thursday night show, our big Thursday night program, and I'm actually prepping for my Saturday program. And I'm sitting here going, well, what in the world am I going to do on Saturday? You know, what am I going to present on our Frat House Saturday program? And I got talk radio on, and there's an announcement at about 3:15 that the Philadelphia Phillies put out a message to all of the local media at 3 p.m. to quick be there at 3:30 for a major announcement from the team. 30 minutes. The media were given 30 minutes notice. And so Well, of course, that began a whole load of speculation amongst a bunch of us here on Facebook and on Twitter and what have you. And a lot of us, I think, were kind of thinking that it was going to be the announcement of the new president, which we actually got yesterday, and we'll talk about that one at length, Andy McPhail. But as it turned out, it wasn't any of that at all. It was, in fact, the manager, Ryan Sandberg, who has been the manager of the Phils for, I believe, less than two seasons, because he took over in September of 2013. Ryan Sandberg standing up and running, technically really running the press conference and announcing that he was at the time, resigning effective immediately. This was a little bit of Ryan Sandberg on Friday.
To do this with the club that originally drafted me in 1978, it was a dream opportunity for me to put on a Phillies Major League uniform. And that's where it really hits hard today as far as making it a difficult decision. But with some leadership roles coming up, I think it was important for me not to be in the way with the way things have gone this year, but to allow the organization to go forward and really get this thing going. But in the last 3 years here in Philadelphia, I have met some of the most passionate baseball fans on a daily basis that always gave me encouragement. They love their baseball team, and that was something I'll never forget.
Now, I got to tell you, gentlemen, I heard the press conference live. I saw it in total after the fact. I listened to it again audio-wise in total. I got to tell you something. That had to be one of the most bizarre press conferences I have ever seen. Ryan Sandberg, who I'm not going to make any qualms about, I've stated it on this airwave before, I'll state it again. I'm a big fan of Ryan Sandberg. Have been going back to when the Phils first, in fact, drafted him. I was very disappointed with this team when they went and let him get over to, moved him over to Chicago, but continued to follow his Hall of Fame career over there, and always found myself rooting for the Cubbies a lot during that period because of Ryan Sandberg. I was thrilled when he found his way back over to this team and really, really wanted to see him succeed as a manager for this team. But that was without a doubt one of the most bizarre press conferences I've ever seen. It did not look like the Phils were really in charge of that press conference at all. You've got, as you just heard there, you've got Ryan Sandberg almost choking up at the microphone. Ruben Amaro throwing in his own comments there after the fact, where his voice is cracking, almost as if he's about ready to well up. I don't know. It was bizarre. Before we get into what it all means, first impressions, everybody. Go ahead, run around the room. What were your first impressions when you saw this coming down?
I thought it was a little random. It was random timing. I thought with everything that happened recently and between the 19-3 Baltimore Orioles game, the whole deal with Ken Giles, everything that happened recently, it was weird that they win a series against the Yankees and he comes out and says the losing's taking a toll on me. I'm stepping down. I thought it was weird timing, but it didn't shock me. It didn't shock me at all. There's a lot that went through my head, but when I first saw it, it was kind of a combination of, I don't want to sound morbid and say joy that he's gone, but maybe a little happiness that we're getting a fresh face. I wasn't the biggest fan of Sandberg as a manager, but also I was shocked that he would really do it. I can't come up with a better term, so randomly, because he leaves the Phillies with really no preparations and finding another manager. Now McCannon is the interim manager for the rest of the season. But really, I saw it, and I wasn't necessarily shocked that he stepped down. I was more shocked on just the timing of it all.
And I have to agree with Nick on that point, like the timing of it, the fact that he said, you know, the losing was getting to him after they had won a series against the Yankees, who I suppose were still considering, you know, contenders in the East. So, but I mean, I've almost feel really bad for Sandberg just because he's a guy who's been waiting for his chance. He's been in the minors managing for a long time, and he's been waiting to get his chance to come up and manage a major league team. And it's just unfortunate that he ended up getting stuck with the Phillies team that sucked, to put it. I mean, he really was thrown a curveball with this team, really wasn't given anything to work with. And, you know, I don't blame him. I don't know if this was a decision. Again, he talked about, you know, looming changes in upper management and the front office. So I don't know if this was a decision by the front office and just played off as Sandberg's idea, or if he really did leave for the purpose of getting out of the way of future plans. I mean, I don't blame him for leaving. I mean, he really was in a bad situation there in Philadelphia. Or here in Philadelphia, I should say.
You know, I made the comment that, you know, I was sitting here on Friday afternoon and I'm, you know, prepping for what am I going to do on my Saturday program. And lo and behold, the whole, you know, 30 minutes, you know, after this press conference was over, 4 p.m., I'm going, well, geez, I don't have to worry about what I'm going to do on my program tomorrow. I think I know exactly where it's going to go. I quickly reached out to a very good friend of ours, a guy who's been a friend of ours for years here at Frat House Sports, and that's Frank Close. And those who have listened to Frat House Sports for you know, numerous years, you all know Frank Close from over at Philadelphia.com. And I got to tell you, this guy is Frank is without a doubt the biggest Phillies fan I've ever met in my life, and he's probably a good 15, 20 years younger than I am. So that says a lot for Frank, because I've been following the Phillies for over 40 years. I asked him a couple of questions outright. I said, was this a decision by management on Ryan Sandberg, or was it Ryan Sandberg's decision? Frank came right back and said he felt that it was Ryan's decision. I'm going to be honest with you. I wasn't certain of that on Friday. What's either of your guys' sense on it? Nick, do you think this was his decision?
Yeah, I do think it was his decision. I think he realized that at the end of the season he was going to be gone anyway, because I think, or at least one would have to think, that they're going to refurbish the entire organization from top to bottom with the new team president. So why kind of wait around? But I think the sign that I saw that really made me feel like it truly was a Ryan Sandberg decision and not a Phillies executive decision was that I think if it was the Phillies that were saying, Ryan, you need to step down, they would have had a plan in place as to who would be the new manager. You know, Ryan steps down and they say, as of right now, we're not sure. And then a little bit later, they say Pete McCannon is the interim manager for the rest of this homestand or series or whatever it was. And then they come out today and say he'll be the interim manager for the rest of the season. It kind of leads me to believe that they were unprepared. And if it was a Phillies decision, they would be prepared. So the fact that they didn't really have any backup plans ready at the time of the press conference leads me to believe that it was a Ryan Sandberg decision, that he kind of just threw it out there. He went into whoever's office and said, yeah, I'm stepping down. Word got around the organization. They had the press conference, and now they're scrambling to find a new manager.
Sandberg said on Friday during his press conference that, in fact, he had been contemplating this move for about a month now. He also indicated that the losing was wearing on him. Well, I don't know. I'm going to be honest with you. As much as I have praised Ryan Sandberg, I found both of those comments to be a bit of a character flaw on Ryan Sandberg's part. If he thinks the losing's wearing on him, what does he think it's doing to the fan base? That's number one. Number two, you've been thinking about this for a month, and you walk in today and you're going to take the entire team off guard. I don't know. I was a little bit put off by that. I'm going to be perfectly honest. I asked Frank Close on Friday whether, in fact, he felt this made Sandberg look weak to stand up there and say, well, you know, the losing was wearing on me. Can you imagine, you know, a Joe Torre or you guys probably don't remember Earl Weaver. Earl Weaver from the Orioles would never get up there and say anything like that. A Sparky Lyle, what's his name from over at the Cardinals for all those years. Who am I thinking of?
Tony LaRussa.
LaRussa, thank you. You know, the good managers would never get up and say, you know, woe is me. Boy, we're losing and it really sucks. And, well, you know, I think I'm just going to take my ball and go home. I don't know. Sean?
I have to agree with you on that point, and I'm going to take another perspective on it. You said, what effect is this going to have on the fans? But what effect is this going to have on the Phillies locker room? Probably an already very discouraged locker room from the fact that they have the worst record in the MLB, and now your manager has given up on you, essentially, is what he's saying. The losing has gotten to him, and he is stepping down, giving up on your team. So what do you think that's going to do to the locker room? More discouragement in the locker room, that's not going to be very good. So I think, I mean, just the fact that this whole decision seemed like a spur-of-the-moment thing, I mean, like you said, it was, you know, he had thought about it for a month before he finally made the decision. So it's not like it was very spur-of-the-moment for him, but if no one else knew, he's just kind of throwing the team under the bus. He's like, all right, well, here's the situation, and I don't want to be a part of it anymore, so here you go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in some respects, if you're having that much trouble with it, where, I don't know, you're losing sleep over the whole situation every night for a month, or, you know, you're, I don't know, going through anxiety attacks over the whole thing for a month, wouldn't you think that he would open up to somebody inside the team and at least give them a clue? You know, that something here, might give. You know, that's the only thing I'm wondering. I mean, that's the thing that kind of struck me a little bit. Now, Frank indicated on Saturday he doesn't think that it's necessarily going to affect Sandberg's stock, that more than likely he's probably going to end up with another team. I don't know if there's a team that's necessarily going to be willing to immediately run out there and take a chance on putting him in a managerial position. I'm going to be honest with you, if I were a team looking for a manager, I'm going to look at him with a slight character flaw question mark, to be honest. But nonetheless, he doesn't think that. And I think in some respects, I don't know, Sean, did you just say it before? How much blame can you really put on this, on Ryan Sandberg for this team? I mean, seriously, I know, Nick, you just said, you said that you weren't a great fan of his as a manager. But really, how much blame can you really put on Sandberg? You know, I just mentioned Joe Torre, Tony La Russa, Earl Weaver, Sparky Lyle. I don't think any of those guys could have managed this team to a better record than what we see right now. Go ahead, jump in, anybody.
I mean, I was just going to say that, you know, like you went back to that, and I was just about to go back to that too, is the fact that can we give him the benefit of the doubt because of the fact that he was thrown into this makeshift Phillies franchise at the time that he was thrown in? I mean, you know, if you gave it a few years and they finally figured out whatever the hell they were going to do, and then, you know, and then he was managing the team with maybe some better players, maybe there would have been a different outcome. But just the situation he was in now really was, like, probably the worst situation he could have been thrown into.
I see Ryan Sandberg, and I see a manager that, sure, he was dealt not the greatest cards, but he didn't make the most of what he had. There's a lot of teams in this league whose lineup and starting rotation and bullpen is really, truly not that much worse than the Phillies, or not maybe a little bit better, or not that much, I'm sorry, not that much better than the Phillies. And those teams have 10, 15 more wins than we do. This is a manager that I don't expect to win 80 games. I don't expect them to win 70 games. What do you, the record they had, whatever, it's not a big deal. You know, they're going to be bad. They might as well be the worst. But from a strategic standpoint, I thought he was terrible when it came to pitching. I thought he left pitchers in far too long. He didn't know when to pull a reliever, when to pull a starter. I thought he wasn't super genius when it came to strategy and lineups. I've never seen him really – I mean, this is a manager that came out to argue balls and strikes and found a way not to get ejected. When Franco got ejected, watching that third strike get by the other day, he was arguing with the umpire at the plate, and he didn't get ejected. So you have to believe umpires are told that managers cannot argue balls and strikes. Basically, the second they step onto the field, it's almost spontaneous. It's almost instantaneous. They're gone. Sandberg finds a way to get himself out there, argue balls and strikes, and he's not ejected. So you wonder, what was he even talking about? Was he even talking about the balls and strikes? Like, how do you manage to do that? I never really see him stick up at umpires. You know, like, not necessarily Bobby Cox or Lou Piniella, but maybe a Charlie Manuel. I mean, Charlie Manuel, when he got angry, he was angry. You never really see Sandberg do much of that. A lot of players didn't seem to respect him. There's rumors he lost control of the clubhouse. I don't think, and again, there's not, you could put the greatest manager with this team and they're not a playoff team. Like, the cards are just too poor. And you could put Ryan Sandberg with the Cardinals or the Royals, and I'm sure they'd do fine. They'd do a great job. I think managers a lot of times get too much credit when a team does well and not enough, or too much blame when a team does poorly, very similar to a quarterback in football. But I just don't think he's a manager. From what I've seen, I really don't think he's a manager. And it's a short sample size, but it just doesn't seem like he's a manager. A coach, I think he'd be a great coach. I think he'd be a good hitting coach. He'd be a good infield coach. He'd be good at teaching players. I just don't know if he's manager, if he's got manager stuff. And after this season and the way he left, Mike, like you said, the character flaws and just the I can't take losing and everything he said and the way he left, and because the team's so bad and since he took over, they, not even just this year, but since he took over, they've got like the worst record in baseball. I'm not sure he's going to get another job as a manager. I'm not sure teams are going to want to look for a manager and say, let's hire a manager that just managed the worst team in baseball. I think maybe a coach. I think you could get a coaching job, but there's just too much I saw that had nothing to do with wins and losses, where I saw and I just think, what is he doing? Like, what kind of management is this? What is he doing? What is he trying to get across? What is his plan here? Why didn't he do this? Why didn't he do this? Why did he do this? And then beyond that, you hear about just the players' respect and the embarrassments on the field between Ken Giles and Jeff Francoeur and Chase Utley. It's embarrassing, and that's a manager's job to prevent that from happening, to prevent all of that from happening, and to keep everybody under control. The fact that we see that on the field and don't just hear that it happened in the locker room, that we see it on the field, is not only embarrassing, but proves that Ryan Sandberg had absolutely zero control of the clubhouse, of the players, and of the team. And as a manager, who's going to hire a manager that can't even control his own players?
Yep. I heard a great, I'm not going to say great, but I heard a talk radio guy today make the comment that, you know, of the four majors, when it comes right down to it, and I couldn't agree with him more on this, of the four majors, a baseball manager at this level, when you're talking Major League Baseball, we're not talking minor leagues, at this level, is the most irrelevant of the four major teams. In other words, we're not talking about the head coach of a football team, of an NFL football team. You're not talking about the head coach of an NHL team. You're not even talking about the head coach of an NBA team, which is going to have a schematic look to it. You know, an NBA basketball coach has got to go in, look at what his personnel is, and draw up a schematic based on what he's got in front of him. You can't just go in and overlay certain schemes on every single team. You got to look at what your pluses and your minuses are. That's true of a football team, certainly true of an NHL team as well. A manager's job in baseball, when it comes right down to it, is basically that of a human resources director. You got to go in, you got to pump these guys up, aside from filling up a lineup card, filling out a lineup card every night, what the heck is a manager doing? Seriously. You know, and when we talk about the most basic things, as you just point out, Nick, like, you know, not being able to keep control of your guys on the field themselves. You know, you got Chase Utley out there mouthing off to Bob McClure, and you got Ken Giles sitting in your own dugout who's mouthing off to you. I mean, for God's sake, that's the most basic element of managing, it would seem to me. And it was evident it was not there. It was just not there. You guys have worked with managers in baseball teams, in organized youth baseball. However, it would seem to me that even at that level, a manager is much more important than a manager would be up in the major league level. Would that be accurate?
I think the difference between the managers we see at rec fields and the managers we see at major league ballparks is the manager at the major league ballpark is a manager. A manager at a little league level is a coach, and there's a difference. People who may be some casual fans and then the not casual fans will call a manager a coach, will call the coach the manager, and it kind of bothers me because they're different things. Not that a manager can't teach. I mean, Charlie Manuel, when he managed the Phillies, was a great hitting teacher. He taught a lot of his players about swings and about hitting. Not that they can't teach, but a coach is there to coach. And the definition of coach, obviously not verbatim, but the definition of coach is to teach and to help one get better. The definition of manager is to organize people. So, like you said, they fill out a lineup card. They'll stand up for their players in umpire arguments. They'll decide what strategies to use. They'll decide when to bring in a reliever and things like that. A coach is there to teach. The hitting coach works with players in the batting cages and, you know, get your foot down earlier. Make sure you really get your hands out there. Let's choke up on the bat. Let's use a bigger bat and slow your swing down. Blah, 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 blah. A pitching coach, your strides been inconsistent, you're dropping your elbow, you're not staying on top of the ball, whatever it might be. A coach is there to coach, a manager is there to manage, and I think when you get to the major league level, these players, not that they can't be coached and they don't have more to learn. I mean, every player on the Phillies right now has a lot to learn. I mean, really fundamental things too. Ben Revere not oversliding every base he slides into. That's something he needs to be coached on. But when you get to the major league level, these players, they're there to perform, and they're there to perfect their art. They're not really there to learn the next level of the game or, be coached doing this. And coaches play a vital role, and I don't want to sound like a hypocrite because I do think that players do need to be coached and they have things to learn. But a manager's job, and really even a major league coach's job, is not to teach these guys how to play baseball. It's to help them get out of funks and help them sharpen their slider and things like that. So a manager at the major league level is not the same as a coach in a different sport or any other level. It's not the same as college, high school, grade school, T-ball, whatever it may be, because a manager is called a manager for a reason. It's because he's organizing people. He's not coaching. If he was coaching, he'd be the head coach, but there is no head coach in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly.
I don't have much to add to what Nick had said, because I think that
blogspot.com.
Sorry. I'm having some technical difficulties over here.
Oh, yeah. Yep, yep.
Yeah. All right, let me try to figure that out. You guys can keep going on.
Yep, I got it. We're still getting a little feedback. I don't know. Sean, perhaps you ought to back out and come back in. How about we try that one? Yeah, there we go.
Well, I'm still getting it.
Oof. Well, I will try to work with it. I'm going to try to work with it anyhow. I want to bring up a clip here from yesterday's press conference where we had the press conference announcing.
All right, hold on.
Is this working? Nick, you're not hearing any feedback. I'm getting some serious feedback.
I'm not hearing anything.
All right, I'll try to get through it. Like I said, let me. All right. No, I'm still getting big time. Let me play this clip and let me see if I can get this worked out on my end as well. This was from yesterday, where very interestingly we heard from John Middleton, who is the majority owner of the Philadelphia Phils, and the new president, that is the upcoming president, Andy McPhail, talking about Ryan Sandberg. Let me see if I can work out my problem, and let me play this clip. And if I don't get back in here before then, guys, well, you're just going to have to carry it on forward for a couple of moments. But let me play this clip here real quick.
Danny Palmel's Comcast Sports. This question is for John. I'd like to hear Andy's response as well. Piggybacking on what Todd had to say, this team doesn't have a manager. And, John, I wanted to hear about when and how you heard about Ryan stepping down, and that had to kind of muddy the waters a bit in anticipation of bringing Andy in to the fold.
So I probably heard about Ryan an hour after Ryan walked into Pat's office on Friday and announced that he was resigning, to answer your question.
Okay.
And I would I can tell you my reaction was disappointment. You know, and I'm not in a position of telling you, making any idea what kind of manager he was. I've known Ryan since our time in Chicago. You know, to me, actions speak louder than words. Here's a guy that walked away from a state-of-the-art contract in the mid-90s because he was worried about the well-being of his family. That's, you know, huge in the character department for me. And then after his playing days in Chicago, he came to see me to tell me he wanted to put his hat in the ring to be the Cubs manager that next year. And I'm like, you know, Ryan, you know, there's a path you typically follow to do this. And to his credit, he went down to Peoria in the Midwest League, you know, future Hall of Famer, and started managing there. So I really don't know what was going through his mind, but there are a few people in this game I have more respect for as a human being than Ryan Sandberg.
Danny, do you have the second part of that question?
I think that.
But, John, when you look at it, Ryan sort of talked about, alluded to the fact that a new regime would be coming in and he didn't want to get in the way. How did you look at that comment? Did you see that as like a precursor to what's happening today or just a passing comment, his own personal thoughts?
Those are certainly his personal thoughts. I mean, there was nothing in any of the conversations that Jim, Pete, and I had with Andy over the last 4, 5, 6 months that suggested that there was any reason why Ryan should be looking for the door. So I think that was really Ryan's personal decision. And I, like Andy said, I'm disappointed. And there's a part of me that wonders, what did we do wrong that we couldn't reach out to somebody? We didn't have a sense that Ryan was bothered enough to kind of be thinking that sort of way. I'm very sad by it, actually. He's a wonderful guy. He was one of my heroes. I was upset when we traded him. I was more upset when we traded him. He became a Hall of Fame player. And I was really thrilled when he came back. And I was looking forward to working with him for many years.
Okay. Now, I had made the comment before that I wasn't sure whether, in fact, it was his decision or whether it was the management's decision of the Phils to do this or not. After hearing that, I'm going to tell you right now, there's little doubt in my mind it was Ryan Sandberg's decision to, in fact, do what he did last Friday. There was some speculation as well, and I don't know whether either one of you heard this rumor as well, that Ryan Sandberg did not want to have to deal with Andy McPhail. Excuse me. Because Andy McPhail had been over there with the Chicago Cubs when he was there, and perhaps, apparently, their relationship wasn't exactly tremendous. And so, therefore, Ryan Sandberg did not want to have to deal with that. And I don't know. Again, I kind of view that as a bit of a character flaw issue, if in fact that's truly the case. When I brought that situation up to Frank Close on Saturday on our Frat House Saturday program, Frank dismissed it and said that was erroneously reported. Although I've continued to read those sorts of reports, not just here in the Philadelphia region, but also out of the Chicago area as well. that Ryan Sandberg and Andy MacPhail aren't exactly, well, let's put it this way, they're not exactly trading Christmas cards. I don't know. Any thoughts? I mean, again, it just kind of, to me, what we just heard there from John Middleton and from Andy MacPhail, who will be taking over come October 1 as the new president of the Philadelphia Phillies, to me, it kind of confirmed that it was all on Sandberg. Any other observations? I think we got the feedback problem solved. Thank you, guys.
No problem.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sean.
Okay. I just would have to agree with you on this, Mike. I mean, you really think that, you know, past relationships or whatever would be water under the bridge at this point, especially in the situation? I mean, with Sandberg being a player at the time, I mean, it just seems like this is something that shouldn't have been, like, if this was part of the decision, and it just seems like, you know, it should have been put in the past, and he shouldn't even been worrying about who was being put into the office. Like, he just should have been worrying about doing his job.
Bingo. Right. Okay. Well, let's move on to yesterday for a moment, because what we've been talking about up to this point, and if anybody wants to jump in with us, please don't hesitate. We are talking a little bit, and I know we're going a little elongated here, but about the drama that has been the Philadelphia Phillies since last Friday. Some would say, well, wait a minute, what are you talking about since last Friday? They've been a drama team all year long. Not really. Drama only from the standpoint of bad drama, but if anybody wants to jump in with us and give us their thoughts on anything that we're talking about, please don't hesitate. 347-826-9964. That's how you can get to a cell phone or any other type of phone that you might have. 347-826-9964. Jump in the chat room, leave us a message there over on Blog Talk Radio, or if you wish, hit me up over on Twitter at Frat House Mike. Okay, that was Friday. Monday, here we go. I forget what time it was. I think it was 2:30 in the afternoon. This press conference yesterday goes for almost 45 minutes. I've got quite a few clips from it. But it turns out to be, up at the microphones here on this particular case, you've got John Middleton, who is one of the, I guess we'd have to say, majority owners, although he is not the majority owner, because there is no one majority owner to the Philadelphia Phillies. John Middleton, and then next to him, Andy MacPhail, who's being introduced as the next president of the Philadelphia Phillies, and then Pat Gillick, who has been the president. This is his second time round with that position, I believe, with the Phillies, at the end of the table. That's it. That's all we're talking to. We're not talking to Ruben Amaro. We're not talking to anybody else. The thing I came out of this one from, gentlemen, was for the first time, and I don't know how much this is going to mean to you guys, because as I pointed out, I've been following this Phillies team for over 40 years, and I'm not sure whether you guys have perhaps maybe the longevity to pick up on the significance of this, but we actually are looking at an owner for the Phillies. That hasn't happened for the fan base here with this team in, I'm talking decades, at least 25, maybe 30 years. We haven't seen an owner at anything. We have not seen an owner at a press conference. We wouldn't know any of the owners if we bumped into them down at the ballpark. To me, the most significant thing about yesterday's press conference, aside from the fact that the Philadelphia Phillies went outside the organization for what will be their new president, the most significant thing was being able to put a face to the ownership. Any thoughts on that?
No, I gotta agree with you. I don't think I have much of the longevity to be able to really get behind any of this. But I don't know. Just from my perspective, I think when the we put a face to the franchise in Philadelphia, and it's always a player, I know that. So I can definitely back you on that if that's what you're getting at, and that, like, for the first time we're seeing the owner. Because every time we look at a team in Philadelphia, every year, whatever team it is, we think of the face of the franchise as in most scenarios in most cities, as it should be. But I do kind of understand what you're saying in that for the first time, really, we're interacting with the owner. And, you know, like you said, I don't have the longevity to really fully get behind what you're saying. But in my short span of religiously following these teams, I don't ever remember a time when we're really looking at an owner like this.
Well, consider for a moment, Nick, let me throw it to you this way. You know who the owner of the Philadelphia Eagles are.
Right.
You know who the owner of the Philadelphia Flyers is.
Maybe.
Okay. Ed Snyder. we know who the... while we may not see him very often, but we do know the name of the owner of the Philadelphia 76ers. I guess my point is that this has always been something that's been kind of clouded in the background with the Philadelphia Phillies since Rulli Carpenter sold them. Rulli Carpenter actually owned this team back in 1980 when they won the World Series the first time. Actually, the most recent first time. Since the Carpenter family left the Phillies organization behind, we have not had a handle on who's been the owner of this team for decades. And, you know, I made a point of bringing it up here this evening in preparation for this program. I was bringing it up to a couple of people right here at Frat House Sports, and I said, you know, we don't think twice in this town about ripping apart the owner of the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, we'll yell at privately, you know, in our own little corners. We'll yell at Jeff Lurie for something we don't like. We'll yell at Ed Snyder for something we don't like. But we've never been able to yell at the owner of the Philadelphia Eagles because we don't know who the devil it is. So instead, we take it out on the general managers, who have been Ruben Amaro or Ed Wade or Bill Giles. You know, we take it out on those guys. But those guys are just there as employees of the ownership group. So we don't ever really get a chance to take it out on the right people. A couple of interesting things. This is John Middleton. And see, with all due respect, I'll be honest with you. This is where somebody like not that I'm calling them out. I'm not calling them out. Don't get me. I don't want it to be perceived that I'm calling them out. But this is where someone like Rick on Deck would absolutely understand what I'm talking about. When it comes to me, this was a kind of a really, really interesting moment to have John Middleton sitting up there talking about the Philadelphia Phillies and talking about his role. This is a couple of comments here. I want to point this out because this reporter pinpoints it exactly to John Middleton on what I'm talking about. Because this reporter says to John Middleton directly, excuse me, we've never seen you guys before. Does this signal a new era? And this was John Middleton talking about it yesterday during this press conference.
Sam, this is for John. Sam Dinellum with the Philadelphia Daily News. Kind of to piggyback on what Bob Ford said, in this town we have very, very focal owners. We know who Jeffrey Lurie is. We know who Josh Harris is. Whether it's fair or not, you guys have been treated like ghosts. You've heard all. You read. You hear. What I'm seeing today is this part of a conscious change by you guys. Do you see yourself in this situation more, or are you happy with A, the perception of how you guys are looked at, and B, the way it's been operated?
Well, since I'm here to introduce a new president, I hope I'm not in this situation again very soon, Sam. That would be an unfortunate experience for a lot of people. I think it's safe to say you're onto something there, Sam. And there's been an evolution within the franchise, I think, over the last several years. And I think that has a lot to do. I mentioned earlier that if you went back 20-plus years ago, how many owners there are and how you know, people like the Betzes have sold their interest, and FitzDixon has sold his interest, and as that ownership group has shrunk, the Bucks and my family have had an increasingly larger position, and with that comes a level of responsibility that's very different than it was 25 years ago. And so I think you have to acknowledge that, and you have to kind of step up. And so one of the things that I would say, Andy is going to have complete decision-making authority, just as Pat has, just as David had before Pat, and just as Bill had before David. But Pete, Jim, and I have been much more involved in the issues at an earlier stage than we were 5 years ago, for example. And that's not going to change. I think we're going to be there asking questions in an earlier stage. You don't want us making baseball decisions, trust me. But I think we need to be sure that we're asking as many hard questions of the people who are involved in that process of getting information and sifting through the information and ultimately making the decision. We need to be comfortable that they're crossing all their T's and dotting all their I's. And I think that's not going to change.
Todd?
Andy, Todd's a lucky.
And what I hear there from John Middleton is I hear an indictment being leveled at the way that this team has been operated and managed for the past 5 years. That is what I heard right there from John Middleton. He didn't say it outright. He wasn't nasty about it. But it is absolutely clear that what he is saying is we as an ownership have not made the people that have been running this team accountable for what they are doing. Absolutely positively, that is what I heard. Anybody hear anything different?
No, I'm hearing the same thing. And I think that reporter is really touching on something that I was thinking about first hearing about this, is the fact that although I was not around for all 30 years of the absence of the owner of the Phillies, it's really telling that the owner would come out now of all times to make this big announcement of a new president and all this stuff. So I like me hearing that is really telling of the fact that this seems like this is the big change for the Phillies. Now, you know, in the words of Nick, it's early. So we can't exactly tell if this is going to be the right move for the Phillies, but certainly a big move that, you know, is going to take this team into the next 5, maybe 10 years.
Or longer, let's get that one straight, because, I mean, I think basically what we're looking at is you're looking at really a model change. You know, certainly the team is sticking with the same management model. We're going to have the president up at the top. You'll have your owners. You'll have your president. You have your general manager, your manager on the field. That model is not necessarily changing. But I think the dynamic of the model is positively changing. And I think that that is what you heard from yesterday's press conference. Andy McPhail is an outsider. The one thing that disappoints me, not disappoints me, I take that back. One thing that I guess maybe concerns me about Andy McPhail is his age. He's not a youngster. He's 62 years old. Now, some people would say, well, with that comes a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge. All right, fine, I got all that. But what I'm appreciative, I guess, with the Philadelphia Phillies is they have not gotten quite near the criticism that the Philadelphia Flyers have gotten in this town from the standpoint of constantly recycling their alumni and their old-timers through the management systems of their team. They have not gotten that criticism, albeit they rightfully should have. And the reason that they haven't is because we've never known who to necessarily blame because we didn't know who the hell the owner was. So this Philadelphia Phillies team is not dissimilar to the way that the Flyers have operated for all those years, where we're constantly just recycling the guys that we liked, that we loved, that we held up to esteem on the ice, and then we move them into front office management positions, whether they're capable of doing the job or not. And when we find out they're not capable of doing the job, well, we're going to put them away in a broom closet someplace, but don't worry, they're still going to be on the payroll. It's the Ruben Amaro effect. That's what it is. And I think what you heard yesterday from John Middleton, who is, by the way, a Philadelphia native himself. I knew his father very, very well. From John Middleton is that we are not going to do business as usual anymore. This is not going to become some sort of an incestuous sort of team like the Philadelphia Flyers, where we're just going to constantly recycle old-timers. That's what they're doing. They're going to make people accountable. There it is. That's what I came away from it with. I don't know. Nick, jump in if you have any comment.
Not much of a comment. I think I agree with pretty much everything that's been said. I'm happy to hear that people will be held accountable, because I think that's something that since the championship in Philadelphia, we haven't really seen, because players and coaches and managers have been getting free passes because of what they did in 2008, but it's now 2015, so it's nice to hear that that accountability is back in Philly.
All right, there you go. All right, let's move it around, because we've spent a lot of time on that one topic, understandably. And, if you're angry and you want to yell at me and call me out and make me accountable, that's fine. You can do that. 347-826-9964. That's how you can do it. I am trying to be accountable now. I'm going to get around and get to some other topics. Hey, how about this one? We've got a major. We got an all-star game coming up in 2 weeks. Now, we could talk about the voting problems with that. We've already touched on it a little bit. But I want to make sure we get on this one, because I didn't want to run out of time for it this evening. I don't know if you guys heard this, saw this. I'm going to be honest with you. I've read through it now 4 times, and I'm still not sure if I completely understand it. I'm not joking. I've read through this 4 times. The Home Run Derby. Well, Major League Baseball, I think, finally, it got through to them. Yes, I'm talking finally, it got through to them that the Home Run Derby has become a little bit stale. It doesn't quite have, I think probably in the past couple of years I've tuned into it for want of something else. But, you know, look, Major League Baseball has kind of got us right there. I mean, you know, there's nothing else to possibly choose from. So I'm tuning in because, well, there's nothing else to tune into. They've gone and they've upgraded the rules, if you want to call it an upgrade. And I got to be honest with you, I've read through it, and it's about as convoluted and confusing as I have ever read through on this. I sent the article over to everybody, which came out from Yahoo Sports just 2 days ago. Was anybody able to make head or tail of this? Apparently we're going to go to a bracket type system. I think it needs to be changed, but maybe we've gone too far, or maybe what it's going to take is it's just going to take for all of us to have to live through one of them to figure out how it's all going to work. Because in writing, to me, it's still very confusing. I don't know. Now, I will say this, because of the fact this, I'm now aware of the fact that the Home Run Derby has been modified. I will say this, I am more inclined now to at least tune into it to find out whether, in fact, it's gotten better or not, but I'm not sure that it has, based on what I'm reading. I don't know. Was anybody able to make head or tail of this?
A little bit. Not too much. I mean, like you said, it's being changed to a bracket, which is going to take 2 people out of the derby. Before it was 8 or 10 players, now it's going to be 8 players. Bracket system based on seeding. That's based on home run totals through up until July. And then each player is going to get 5 minutes to hit home runs. But if you're under a minute to go and you hit a home run, the timer is stopped until you don't hit home runs. until you hit a ball that isn't a home run. Then your timer starts up again until you hit another home run, and then it stops. And depending on the length of your home run, you can add an extra 30 seconds bonus to your time, that length being 475 feet. If anyone who just heard that can make any hide nor hair of what this means, please call in and let us know, because I think most of us are confused over here at Frat House. And I have to agree with you, Mike. I think this is something, especially at the point we're in now, it's in 2 weeks, Monday, July 13th. So I think it's something that we're just going to have to live through. And we're all going to have to watch it to see how it actually turns out and if it turns out well. But as far as, you know, fan excitement over it, maybe it'll be a little better for the fans, but it's also definitely going to change the dynamic of the home run derby for the players. Because beforehand, you could take your time. You could, you know, each pitch you could take your time on, just have the guys throw at your pace. You could take the pitches you wanted to take. Now it's timed.
Okay,
which
well,
means
that
you need to
make
get
it
as,
interesting. Yeah.
Which means you need to get as many swings in as possible, but you can't rush yourself because you need to make sure that you're actually getting good looks and good pitches. So I think it's definitely going to change the dynamic for the players, and that might end up making, you know, maybe a less interesting, well, more interesting for the fans, but maybe we'll see a lot less home runs than we have before because guys are rushing themselves and they don't know what to do because they're not used to these new rules. They're used to the way that it was before. But
one of the things that we have heard over the years is that, and we've seen it, let's get it straight. A lot of the players that probably should be participating in it, perhaps maybe opt out because, you know, there's been the old stories about guys messing up their swing after they come out of one of these. I don't know. While the timing thing might sound like a great idea for the fans, is that such a great idea for the player? I don't know. Who's just simply, you know, performing in an exhibition? I don't know. Nick, any thoughts?
Yeah, I got a thought. I saw this, and what? What is... Not even just confused. Why? Why? What is the need? If people don't want to sit there and watch the Home Run Derby, don't watch it. Like, if ratings are really struggling that severely because baseball is that desperate to speed up the game that they have to speed up the Home Run Derby as well and make sure we're not sitting and watching nine pitches go by in between swings, put an umpire behind home plate and have him call balls and strikes. If the pitch is a strike, it's an out. Give him 10 outs. Honestly, I promise you these 5 minutes will take longer than 10 outs because the clock's stopping. The clock will stop. And then, like Sean said, 475 feet, I think there's also a rule for two straight home runs of 425-plus, which means now we're also measuring home run distances, and we got to make sure it's measured and it's reported down to the field because they got it almost immediately on TV, make sure the guys on the field know it's happening, make sure it gets to the timer guy. We're going to see guys tire themselves out a lot quicker. And if you ask anybody that's participated in the Home Run Derby, they will tell you it is one of the most strenuous activities they have to do in their career. It really takes a toll on them. And now they're going to be swinging at every pitch because there's no reason not to. There's no
exactly.
If you get out, you get out. They're going to be swinging at every pitch, and they're going to be rushing their swings. They're going to be even more tired. I think you're going to see less of a show. And you know what? If you can't appreciate the Home Run Derby the way it is now, no, it's not a perfect system. And I think I've been saying for a couple of years now they should put an umpire back there, have them call balls and strikes, or do something that just, you know, make sure that they're not looking at 12 pitches from a batting practice pitcher they picked before they take another swing. But if you can't appreciate the Home Run Derby now, you can't do anything to the Home Run Derby to make you appreciate it anymore. You're going to give them 5 minutes, just take as many swings as you can. A lot of hitters won't be in the box for 5 minutes. And now you're going to stick them in a Home Run Derby and have them do 5 minutes and then a bracket, so they might be up three times. They're going to tire themselves out. And then by the time we get to the championship round or the final two or however this is working with the new bracket system, you're going to see less of a show because they're tired by the time they get there. I think it was a completely unnecessary change in the system of the Home Run Derby. I don't get the timing. I don't get all the rules. To me, it's just going to be more difficult to watch because we're like, what is going on? What is this time? Why did he just get 30 more seconds? Right? So I'm going to sit there and I'm going to watch the Home Run Derby and I'm going to count. I'm going to count how many outs they get. And once they reach 10 outs, I'm going to stop. And I'm going to tweet out, if you follow me on Twitter, at NManderano, and I'm going to talk about it. How many home runs in a real Home Run Derby, a traditional Home Run Derby, how many home runs they would have hit before those 10 outs. And then I'm going to say how many home runs they hit and see, maybe it makes a difference, maybe it doesn't, but maybe that difference is huge. Maybe it makes a difference in who would have advanced, who would have won. And not that the problem is that it made a difference in who would have advanced or who would have won, but just I just think it's going to be really interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see more stamina guys go deep than a guy who swings as hard as he can, like Prince Fielder. Prince Fielder swings as hard as he can, but because he swings as hard as he can, he's going to get tired. And not to mention the dude's out of shape, but that guy can hit the ball 500 feet. So I don't understand. I think it's going to be interesting just in the fact that it's new. I think it's going to be difficult to watch, and it hit me like a truck. I saw it. I saw the headline, and I didn't even know they were thinking about changing the Home Run Derby, unless, you know, maybe I live under a rock. But I saw the changes, and just why? I don't understand. And then they have to go and make it more complicated than it needs to be. I don't understand the drastic need to speed up this game. The great
thing about
baseball is that there's no clock.
Also, I think you should definitely keep an eye on like the trueness of, you know, how many home runs that people get, because it really is going to, this whole new system is going to become a factor in, you know, if someone could have made it to the next round or not, because beforehand it was just the top however many out of the first round would move on. So in this new bracket system, you could have a matchup where a guy loses, you know, say the score was, you know, 20 to 16 is the score of it. But then there's another bracket where the score was 17 to 12. The guy only hits 12 home runs. You know, like there's going to be situations where there's guys who lose in a round that could have possibly advanced if it was still in the old system. So, I mean, it's definitely going to change the whole dynamic of the Home Run Derby. And also, don't even get me started on ties, because the way ties work is that ties are broken by whoever has the most home runs up until the Home Run Derby. But if those two players are tied in home runs, then the tie is determined by a coin flip.
Are you kidding?
A coin flip.
They really want to speed this up that they can't have a three-swing swing-off?
They're seeded based on a coin flip. Explain that one to me.
That's a desperate call to speed up the Home Run Derby. They really want to speed up this game so much that they've resorted to a coin flip and a predetermination to break a tie where we could have a three-swing or five-swing swing-off that takes 7 minutes.
Well, consider this for a moment, guys. At least now, by doing the coin flip, you know, we don't have to hear Chris Berman doing the back, 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 back. We can now hear him go, it's up, it's good.
Flip, 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 heads.
I mean, seriously, if they wanted to make this thing a little less stale, get rid of Chris Berman. If I never had to hear back, 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 back again, it'd be too soon. Seriously. I mean, that's all they had to do. Just keep the same rules. Just get a new play-by-play guy, preferably somebody who's, like, not Bob Costas. I don't want Bob Costas doing the Bob Costas, can you imagine Bob Costas doing a Home Run Derby? That really would be hysterical. I'd almost like to hear a parody of that. I think that would be really wild. All of a sudden, in the middle of somebody hitting a home run, he would have to go into an editorial about something social. Wow. Yeah, well, hey, good job, Major League Baseball. All of us here at Frat House Sports are anxiously looking forward to sitting down 2 weeks from now and watching the Home Run Derby so we can figure out what the hell it is you're talking about that you're planning on doing that night. Real quick, well, just on that same topic, though, Nick, do you think that there is anything to the guys that have come out of this saying, you know, it really messed up my swing for the rest of the year? And
no.
for those that have claimed it before, wouldn't this format dissuade even more people, excuse me, from wanting to participate in future?
Well, I hear that a lot. I hear that all the time, that the Home Run Derby messes up your swing. I don't think that's true. I really don't, because, I don't know, I guess players sometimes say it, but a lot of times it's coming from fans or analysts or whatever it may be. And to me, it would make sense for them to kind of fall off in the second half of the season. Usually when you're in the Home Run Derby, it's because you had a really hot first half of the season. You hit a lot of home runs. And statistics say that when you have a really hot first half of the season, you're not going to be as hot in the second half of the season. Or you get that break in between, that all-star break, and you ruin momentum. There's just a lot statistically where it would make sense that if you're Giancarlo Stanton, who won't be participating because he's hurt, unfortunately, and you've got 27 home runs or whatever he's got in the first half of the season, he would have had probably at least 30 by the break. If you have 30 home runs in the first half of the season, he's not hitting 60 home runs this year. If he is, props to him, but he's not hitting 60 home runs. He had a fantastic first half of the year. Chances are you fall off. And maybe Stanton's not the best example because he's a natural home run hitter, but these guys that get in like the 7th, 8th seeds because they had really hot first halves, they had powerful first halves, guys like Todd Frazier or Nolan Arenado, who, yeah, can, you know, pop the ball out of the ballpark, but aren't 40 to 50 home run guys per se, that if they hit, you know, between 18 and 23 home runs in the first half of the season, it's only natural that they're not going to hit 18 to 23 home runs in the second half of the season, because usually when you play in the Home Run Derby, those last guys, they overperform in that first half. In the second half, they just go back to normal. So I don't really buy into the whole it messes up your swing thing. I don't really see it, to be honest.
Gotcha.
But I do understand. I think with this new format, it'll raise the question for sure.
Oh, I think, yeah, right. Particularly for those all-stars that are like, you know, man, they don't pay me enough. I don't want to do this. I mean, not dissimilar to the NFL all-star guys who go, hey, I really don't want to play in the Pro Bowl after all, you know, so I think I'll just bail. But, you know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if suddenly we're going to start hearing that excuse being brought up more and more and more. In the couple of moments that we've got left, we got about 12 minutes here remaining in this evening's program. We've weighed in our fair share on the nonsensical voting that has gone on this year in the All-Star balloting. Balloting closes up, by the way, folks, on Thursday night. I'm suspecting that's Thursday night going into Friday, so it would be Friday morning at midnight. That would be my suspicion. At least that's what I'm hoping, so that I'm not reporting this incorrectly, because the only thing I have here says, yeah, through Thursday night. So I'm suspecting it's until midnight on Friday morning. So if anybody wants to get it out there and vote, the only way you can do it is online this year. 500 million votes have been cast. I'd love to know whether, in fact, that's a record, because if it is, it would only confirm my suspicion that, well, this whole problem this year has been caused by it being exclusively online only. However, if there's a silver lining to it all here for those non-Kansas City Royal fans, apparently as of what was the date on this particular article that I – oh, 6 hours ago it says here. Oh, so it was just yesterday. No. Or are they updating it? I don't know. I'm not sure what the date on this. I know it's fairly recently, but over at ESPN, Toronto third baseman Josh Donaldson, excuse me, and Seattle DH Nelson Cruz have moved ahead in fan voting for starting spots in the All-Star game, leaving now just 5 Kansas City Royals still in the lead, guys. Just 5. Isn't that great? I mean, it was 8, what, just a couple of weeks ago. Wasn't it 8? So, listen, people are doing what we've asked them to do. Everybody's been bitching and moaning about this. I said to other fan bases that are out there that are complaining about it, well, hey, if you don't like what Kansas City fans are doing, Well, why don't you just do the same darn thing they're doing? Anybody got any updates?
No.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, John.
Nick, you can go first. You can go first.
I was just going to say, Omar Infante is still leading the AL second baseman. Not only does he not deserve the All-Star start bid, but he statistically is arguably the worst second baseman in the AL and maybe the major leagues. On my show today down at St. Joe's, in the back half of the show for the last 45 minutes, my co-host and I were looking at Omar Infante statistically in comparison to second baseman in the AL, and in basically every offensive category, he was either 10th or 11th of 11 qualifying second basemen. In the majors, he was no higher than 18 out of 22 qualifying second basemen in any offensive category, and in terms of all major league players, there were, I forget how many, 156 or so qualifying players, and he was no higher than 130 in every major offensive category. It's a disgrace that he's still in there. I know we're getting better, but Omar Infante, are you kidding me? If he gets a start and he's announced, I hope they boo. And I know it's not his fault, but you got to show some kind of disgust. That's a disgrace. It's a disgrace that he's even in contention. There's other guys, the Royals, that are getting in that maybe I wouldn't vote for, but all right. You know, Moustakas is in second place now. Sally Perez is starting. Like, that's fine. Lorenzo Cain starting. That's fine. Omar Infante? That's a joke.
Nick, we talked about this now for the past couple of weeks. Is this as a result? Let's get this one straight. Look at it logically, it seems to me. This is as a result of the fact that it's online voting only, isn't it? Think about it. I think a lot of fans go to the ballpark, you know, which is where you used to get your ballots before, because I talked about it before. And you really don't think about it when you're down at the ballpark, unless they're standing there at the top of the aisle and they're shoving them down your throat. Now, when you're getting them there, well, then you're going to get some representation from each ballpark. When you've got fans going to a different ballpark, it's simply because this Kansas City fan base just jumped on it as hot and heavily as they did early on and just beat everybody else out. I mean, that's what it's coming down to. But it seems to me you would, in fact, be able to level the playing field, perhaps maybe not completely, but at least a little bit, if you also went back to in-stadium balloting.
Hashtag bring back the ballads.
There you go.
Let's get it trending.
I see your point. I don't think it's 100% the reason why we're seeing this. I think part of it is because Royals fans, as a general fan base, became very pretentious since they made their World Series appearance, and the Royals have gone from the underdog everybody loves to the team a lot of people are getting kind of tired of because of this All-Star thing. I think it's a flaw in the system. They give you 35 votes, which is unnecessary, and then you create three more email addresses, and all of a sudden you're up to 105 votes. It's just the All-Star vote. There's a lot wrong with the All-Star voting. Honestly, I don't even think the fans should vote. I think the players should vote. That point was brought up to me today, and I think it makes sense. Players vote for the pitchers. The game matters. Let the guys who play against and with these guys make the vote. I think you have a point, though, but at the same time, everybody has access – or I shouldn't say everybody has access to the internet, but generally speaking, a lot of people have access to the internet, at least in major baseball cities. In the cities with Major League Baseball, a lot of people have access, some kind of access to the internet. Not everybody can get to a baseball game, but everybody, for the most part, has access to the internet. So it's not like you're really limiting the voting capability to specific markets or specific cities. It makes kind of sense, but I think the bigger issue here is just that Royals fans hopped on board and everybody else is slacking. And for the first time, we're really, really seeing a huge flaw in the voting system. I mean, this is a game that really actually matters, and we're letting fans start Omar Infante. If I'm a fan of NL, I want them to start Omar Infante.
Yeah, I hear you. I get where you're coming from on that one, just from the standpoint that, you know, you want to make the point. But I just think that when you go to the ballpark, I don't care whether you're just an average fan or whether you're just a, hey, I'm showing up because some guy gave me an extra ticket. When you've got the usher standing there at the top of your row handing these ballots out and they're going down the line, you feel compelled to sit there and punch a card. So that's going to help lower the playing field, or level the playing field, as I said, a little bit. Maybe not completely, but a little bit. Without that, you could have a whole load of fans going to a stadium, you know, I don't know, throw one out to me, you know, Twins, going up to Minnesota Twins and watching the game and never even coming out of there, even thinking about going online and voting in the All-Star game. So there's no representation whatsoever. You've eliminated markets. Essentially what you've done is you've eliminated markets. And you've allowed the domination of a market because you're not providing enough opportunity for people. I think you feel compelled when you're at the ballpark to do something. That's what I'm saying. You know, just my observation. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to throw in something here just because I know we're running out of time. But real quick, I mean, I just want to talk about it. Like, people did it. There was 8 Royals at the top of each category, and now there's only 5. So obviously, people rallied together to get people into the All-Star game. So, I mean, although there's still 5 in the All-Star game, I think it's just a matter of too little too late, where it's like, you know, maybe it's the fans' fault themselves that they didn't get on this early enough and vote for the people they wanted in the All-Star game, and that's why there's so many Royals in there. But the other thing is, although it might be the fans' fault, I still don't think that their opinion should be taken completely out of the All-Star game, because I've said this before, the All-Star game is really there to cater to the fans.
I agree.
Like, this, because they want to see the players that they want to see in the All-Star game. Now, and this could also be a matter of people's ignorance, is the fact that if someone's living in Kansas City and just knows who the Kansas City Royals are and just vote for all the Kansas City Royal players, then obviously all the Kansas City people, all the Kansas City players are going to be at the top of the category if they get their fan base on board. Like, me as a fan, like, I'm not going to vote every single Phillies player in because, first of all, I know they don't all deserve it. And second of all, because, you know, there's other guys that I want to see. Like, I wouldn't want to see a whole Phillies team out on the field when I'm playing.
Exactly. And I never did, even when I voted the punch cards. All right, as you pointed out, we're real close here to time. So I want to get into it. We got to get our Series Street Challenge picks in here real quick. Nick right now leads us all 8 wins and 4 losses. I'm 6-6. Caleb's 5-7. Sean's 4-8. Caleb is coming to us tonight, and he's saying,
I started off the season really well. I was on top, and now I'm far, far back in the bottom.
We got plenty of weeks. Caleb's coming to us tonight with the Nationals over the Giants. That's what he's going with, Nationals over the Giants. Sean, go ahead. Where are you at?
I'm going to take Detroit over Toronto.
Tigers over Blue Jays. Okay. Nick, where are we going?
I'm going to take Toronto over Detroit.
Oh, my God. This is the second head-to-head we've had, isn't it?
I think he did that on purpose.
The last one didn't turn out too well for me either.
Oh, man. Oh, good friends you guys are. Good friends you guys are. Listen, I'm going exactly as Caleb did, and the only reason I kept mine there was because, hey, I had my pick in before he did. He just didn't know it. I actually had written mine down over here. I'm going with the Nationals over the Giants, so Caleb and I are identical. There you are. Guys, thanks very much for joining again this evening. Boy, oh, boy, it has flown by. I should have actually made this a two-hour program because, again, didn't get through even half the agenda, but that's all right. We got plenty to talk about next week. Hey, next week, we got Tommy John joining us. Pitcher Tommy John is going to be joining us right here on this program. You want to be there for that. You're also going to want to be here for our Frat House Sports Show. Thursday night, the flagship program coming to you at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. It's going to be our 199th this week, folks. Yes, indeed. All right, there you go. That's our program for this evening. Hey, everybody, get out there. Enjoy your baseball, or perhaps might be your international football tonight. We'll see. Enjoy your baseball.